Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Julie.
We're the hosts of the Hartford Fund's Human-Centric Investing Podcast.
Every other week, we're talking with inspiring thought leaders to hear their best ideas for how you can transform your relationships with your clients.
Let's go.
Sean, welcome to the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. We're so excited to have you here with us today.
I'm excited to be here, Julie. And thank you for inviting me. And John, I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Sean. Well, Sean, you know, we love having conversations with you about the topic of networking and connecting and building relationships. It's funny, as I reflect back on my formative years, even coming into this industry, you never took a course in college on building relationships. When somebody asks you what you wanted to do after school, hardly anybody ever said sales. And yet that's, I think, no matter what profession you're in, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a financial professional, you are trying to persuade someone to your point of view or to engage your services, whatever, through whatever means makes sense to you. And so my question to you to lead off our podcast today is, you work with industries and professionals of all stripes, not just financial services. What are some of the trends that you're seeing happen out there in terms of how it changes the client-professional relationship?
It's a great question. And you know, it's funny, we were chatting about this before, and there's actually like a interesting inverse relationship where I was at KPMG for 15 years. The first 5 years was in tax. The last 10 was in sales. And so that's my upbringing. And then now that I'm out here doing a lot of sales, relationship development, coaching, and consulting, I'm in a lot of different industries, like you mentioned. Some of the industries, a good portion of them, are audit, tax advisory, consulting, law firms, engineering firms. They have an interesting trend in that usually the career architecture happens where you start out as a staff member doing your job, your vocation, whatever it might be, right? Tax advisory, whatever, lawyer, litigator. So you're doing the action. And then after about 5 years, after you're have your feet under you, you are a self-described subject matter expert. Then they layer on the people management stuff and they say, hey, you're a manager now, manage the next crop of direct hires and that kind of thing. So you do that for a few years and then you move up to the sales conversation. And now you want to become partner. Now you want equity. Now you want to be managing director, SVP. And now they start layering in, okay, well, then you're going to have to go out and sell. And there's pushback as these individuals are saying, well, I'm 12, 15 years into my career. I know this was coming, but this was never encouraged. And so sales is almost like their third career by the time they get to it, versus a lot of your listeners are sort of the inverse of that. They come in knowing that if you want to be successful here, you have to sell. You have to build your book of business, assets under management, assets under management. Like, this is the focus. And then as they progress through their career, now they have the people side, and now they have a little bit more of the, you know, create the white papers, be the subject matter experts in other areas. But, you know, the people side of it comes in. So it's an interesting relationship where it's sort of inverse. I think where you are in your career when you begin the sales journey is really important. In the other industries that I mentioned, you can't sell anything if you don't know what you're talking about. That's just flat out, because these are high consulting, law firms, engineering contracts. If you've never done the work, you can't sell it, right? In your industry, in the industry that your listeners are in, you're doing as you're selling, right? So you're doing both at the same time, right out the get-go. The one thing I will say, regardless of where you are learning the sales and business development side, I have this, I'll give it away, but the workshops that I do, the way I kick off most of them is I take a pen out of my pocket and I find someone in the crowd that's like looking down, looks like they were voluntold to be here and probably doesn't want to be here. I find that person and I say, hey, Julie, how are you? And they slowly look up from their book and I say, sell me this pen. And I wait about 3 seconds and I go, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to make you sell me this pen, but I want you to appreciate the look you just had on your face when you thought this was going to be a sell me this pen exercise. And I point out, I'm like, it's the same look the entire table had of, oh my God, here we go, right? Conjures up all the Wolf of Wall Street, Boiler Room nonsense, right? And the reason I point that out is I'm like, that's the same look everyone has when they hear the most dirtiest five-letter word in the English language, which is sales. And so if you know that the word sales and the action of selling is going to conjure up that reaction, then we need to rethink how we're selling. And we need to make sure that we're coming across as advisors helping people versus I'm here to peddle you the latest product. Right? And last thing, I'll stop talking in a second, but the one way I really drive this point home when I do some of my workshops is I say, who's had a recent home renovation done? And as people raise their hands, I'll ask them what they've had done. And sometimes it's a new roof. I just had a deck put on, a kitchen. For most people, it's like the whole house is crumbling. I have so much home projects happening. And then I ask a follow-up question. I say, why did you go with the contractor that you went with? And as we go around and people tell me that the deciding factor is why they went with the contractor they went with, which is a mental exercise they probably never thought to do. As they say keywords, I put the keywords up. Oh, well, I've known them for a long time, and trust, reliability. They were the only one that gave me a quote. Oh, responsiveness, okay. What value? Referrals are big. So I write all these keywords up. And then the next slide is a crystal ball with all of those words in it. And I'm like, the key point here is, do I look like a fortune teller, in my Miss Cleo, to date myself a little bit? I'm not a fortune teller here. So how is it that I knew that these were your buying patterns, that these characteristics are what contribute to you buying? Also, everyone in the room, are these characteristics that you feel like you can exhibit on a day-to-day basis, quality, trust, like reliability, responsiveness? These are easy things. So maybe the idea of sales, if we stay away from that five-letter word, what are we really doing? We're advising people and we're making sure that we exhibit these behaviors on a regular basis so that people feel like they're buying, not that we're selling. And I'll wrap this up with a phrase here. People want to feel like they bought. They don't want to feel like they were sold to. And I use that home renovation example, because that is the one area for some reason we always felt like we bought, right? And, oh, I got a great guy for you. Oh, you should use my deck guy. And we don't feel like we were sold to ever. And so I like to use that example because it's like, that's the kind of mentality we're trying to display with our clients and our prospects.
I love that reframing of that. How do we do that? What are some activities that you work with your coaching clients on to begin that process? Because obviously none of this happens overnight and it's not in one activity or one conversation. Obviously it's multiple activities, multiple conversations, and really obviously starts with yourself and your own mindset, I would imagine. But how will you walk us through how to begin this process of sort of transforming?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we've talked about this a little bit before in terms of making sure that we're doing whatever we can to make them more successful, learning about them as individuals, keeping in mind the fact that I know I have a quota. I carried a bag for 10 years that was in the millions and millions. And every year it started back to zero. And I would look at my goal. I'd have 1.5 million in the pipeline and a goal of 22 million. And I'm like, that pressure of every conversation have meaning so much to parse that out and make sure that that doesn't influence the conversation is really important. You don't want that old gal needs a sale kind of feel when you're talking with clients and prospects. So establishing that trust is really important upfront. Another area that I try to hit on as much as I can with people is the referral aspect is massive. I mean, it can't be understated. If you look at the, I think it was the American Marketing Association or the American Marketing Journal, I think, just came out with a study last year that said 80% of B2B decisions are made from a referral. The person awarded the work or the company awarded the work came through a referral. Developing COIs, developing referral bases, it is fundamental and is key. And you bypass, it's like you get to the sixth date up front, you bypass all of that upfront work of developing trust and all that kind of thing. And all you need to do is make sure you're reiterating what this person heard when the referral came through and then following through appropriately. And so when I help a lot of my clients audit their network, a lot of times what we look at is, and I hear this phrase sometimes where they say, I go to this networking event or I go to this conference. And I don't know, it doesn't feel like the right people are in the room. I hear that a lot. Just didn't feel like the right people were there. Mm-hmm. And I challenge that notion because I'm like, who are the right people? What does that mean? Like an active buyer? Do you think you're just going to just meet active buyers all the time that are ready to just buy? It doesn't work that way. Sales cycles are very long. We know that. But also, just because, like the two of you right now, you might not buy my services ever. However, you know, we're having a podcast here. We're building a little bit of a relationship. There's a good chance you might be able to refer me into other organizations that you're a part of. And so building those referral connections up front and adding them and auditing your network to say, who's a buyer, who's a referral source, who's someone that could grant me access to rooms that I might not otherwise have access to. Looking at all of those different characteristics of who is in our network is key. I'll stop talking here because I know you have other questions, but I partner a lot with one of my best friends, Matt Blank, and he talks a lot about this, and I'm going to give him credit here because I borrow it a lot. It's a perfect way of establishing the ask. When you're making an ask for a referral or for work itself, I think that's where a lot of us get caught up, especially early career professionals, because they know how important it is to get to that signature at the end. And so they'll maybe either go too direct or not direct enough. And hey, if you know of anybody that could, you know, maybe buy my services or could use some help, you know, let me know. And they go the passive route, or they say, are you ready to like sign on with me? And they go way too direct. The way Matt and I kind of frame this out is there's really just three main words to start every ask, whether it's asking for a referral or asking directly for business. And it's just if, could, and will, from less passive to from more passive to more direct. If is just, hey, if you know of anybody or if you have any more questions about your, you know, financial planning, let me know, right? There's no real ask there. It's just if, and the person will say, oh yeah, sure, absolutely, I'll keep you in mind. And then they look at their inbox and they completely forgot about the ask, right? So if is much more passive. It's just a way of sprinkling it in, letting them know that you're here, and maybe on the third or fourth interaction, you'll move a little bit more to the direct side. The more direct side is could and will. So John, I noticed you're connected with so-and-so over here who could buy my services or can help me in some way. Hey, could you do me a favor? Could you maybe make an introduction to that person that could really help me out, right? Now I'm asking you something. And will is even the most direct. All right, I'm looking over my to-dos here. You know, John, you know, you and I are going to connect to talk about that other thing. Hey, Julie, will you do this thing for me? Will you invite me to that next conference that you're going to so I can join you and maybe we could network together? Very direct. I keep saying the last thing I'll say, but the last thing I will really say on this topic is whether it's if, could, or will, the important part, especially for early career professionals, but it applies to everybody. If you're like me who likes to talk, I love to talk. This is going to be the hardest part for you. It's once you make the ask, shut up, just stop talking. Let that silence linger. I talk all the time with one exception, which is immediately following an ask. So could you make that introduction for me? And just looking into my eyes, you're like, oh my God, people they'll fill that void so quick. They'll volunteer for stuff you didn't even ask for. Yeah, no problem. You know what? I'll do you one better because that's not really the decision maker on you. And they go nuts because they hate that silence. And so if you're like me and you don't like awkward silences and you like to talk, really mentally prepare yourself. If that ask is coming and you know you're going to be making the ask to this individual, be sure to get ready for that forced silence and let them volunteer for all of the activities that you need them to volunteer for. So that was sort of scattered all over the place, but hopefully that was helpful.
Absolutely. Sean, I have a question thinking about that, the business development acumen, if you will, kind of knowing that I've got to work on building my business. And I'm thinking specifically about two different types of financial professionals, and I'm not going to leave the third out. The two are the young professional that's just joining the industry. The second is someone that maybe built a career in another industry, has retired, and now is joining the financial services industry with which they were unfamiliar prior. And then the third, which I'll leave on the side for now, is the old dog, new tricks, right? I've been in the industry forever. I'm pretty good at what I've done. I've been pretty successful. You know, do I need to re-examine my system? But let's talk about those first two groups. And here's my question. So this is the young professional or the person that is starting for the first time in financial services, maybe after a successful career. When you think about building a network, do you physically draw out what that network might look like? Like sometimes I think we try to keep it all up here in our heads, like, oh, I've got family members, I've got friends, I've got business. So do you use any kind of a mapping technique when you think intentionally about networking or beginning to build these business relationships?
For sure. It's a great question. And I mentioned it earlier, the when I help people audit their network, we have a spreadsheet that's all the different characteristics of what I call your network ecosystem. Your network is an ecosystem. Everybody plays a part. And I'm talking down to restaurateurs. I know a few restaurateurs. They can't buy my services. Maybe they can make referrals, but that's not really what they're there, because if I want to entertain a prospect or a client, I can text one of those people and say, hey, carve me a little VIP area off to the corner and make me look good. I mean, all the way down to throughout your network, how all of these people can possibly contribute to this network ecosystem you've built. So one, I like to illuminate that for people, that it's not just buyers and non-buyers. It's buyers, referrals, and all, everybody down the list. So that's one. Two, again, I like to play in whatever CRM system they're using, Salesforce, HubSpot, you name it, and make sure that they're setting that up so that the information that they're putting in is then contributing to the longer sales cycle of what it might be. What I would also say for the early career professionals is, and I don't want to paint with too broad of a brushstroke, but in this virtual world, I don't think, God, I hope I don't get in trouble for this. I don't think management overall was prepared for the level of difficulty building a network in this virtual world has. I say that because I lived both. So I was in sales when I walked halls and knocked on doors, and I knew that, John, if I didn't see you today, I'll see you tomorrow. You probably had something going on, but I know you get Starbucks at 8:15 every morning, and so I'll be here again, and we'll happenstance run into each other. We don't have that luxury anymore. That luxury of spontaneity was removed from us. Mm-hmm. Also, the luxury of knowing that if I invite you to an event, you'll probably go. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that anymore. People are going to events with utmost intentionality, because I'm a father of three now. When someone invites me to something, I'm home though, you know, like, and my kids are used to, you know, Taco Tuesdays. And so now I've seen what it's like to be here, and comfortable and not have to deal with traffic and not have to do all these things. So now inviting me to an event, if I'm the prospect, the need for absolute intentionality is really fundamental, because there's a really good chance I'm just going to say, hey, I wish I could, but not going to be in the city, or not going to be there, or I have to take Eric to baseball tonight, whatever the excuse might be, versus, well, I'm in the city anyway, I'll stop over for a drink, say hello, right? It's different. So I would say overall, none of us were prepared for those massively different changes. For the early career professionals who are trying to build that network, like, that was a luxury I had. I knew that if you were my client, I was going to find you one way or another because I knew where it was. Now it might not happen. So I think we need to really dive deeper into helping early career professionals, A, build their virtual brand so that we're walking the halls virtually at our clients and our prospects. I'm very big on that with early career professionals. Again, I'm not talking like TikTok, like let me do a dance while I talk about interest rates. I'm talking more about like LinkedIn and stuff like that. I think it's really important to walk the virtual halls, have your image, your likeness, who you are, show up in people's feeds so that they know what you're about. They know you exist. I think that's really important for the early career professionals. I would say for the people who are starting this as a second career, many of my clients, I would say the majority of them, they hire me when they're in some sort of point of transition, whether it's into a different industry, different field, different employer, because there's a lot of transition challenges that arise. You mentioned a couple of them. This isn't my industry, and I have to credentialize myself. It's a very competitive industry. How do I differentiate my brand from all the other really strong brands out there? So there are definitely a lot of challenges. What I would say is initially, in the first month, try to help my clients realize that whatever industry they came from brings a whole lot of value to the new industry that they're in. Just because the roles, responsibilities, just because you know the NACE codes on NACE industry codes don't align, doesn't mean the skills and the experience aren't transferable. And it doesn't mean that, and I tell people this all the time, I say how you exit one room is how you enter the next. Exit with strength, exit with intentionality, so that you enter the next one with strength and intentionality. And I reframe it for everyone. I say, look, I know it sometimes feels like you're running away from your prior industry or your prior employer. Get that out of your mind. You weren't running away from anything. You're running towards this other opportunity because you know what you bring to it. And that helps with brand identification. That helps utilizing the network and the body of work that you've done in your past life, bringing that forward into the new industry that you're in. All of that goes wildly there. So I would say you're not starting something new fresh. You're trying something different. You're utilizing what you believe to be your highest and best use. That's my old valuation term I use for everybody is, you know, if you're a snowblower that someone's trying to use to mow the lawn, your value is zero. But, you know, your highest and best use is where your value is. And so that's what this transition is. So for me, that first month's about breaking down that mental barrier, making sure that we identify all of the assets, tangible, intangible, that we can bring with us from the prior employment to the new employment, including the network. And then once we bring that network up, let's break it down. And then let's see how that network applies to this new ecosystem that we're in.
Thank you.
This is so great. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the preparation for these conversations? You know, it doesn't seem to me like these discussions are the time to be winging it, you know, especially when you're introducing yourself or you're talking about your capabilities or your team's capabilities, you know, if you're part of a team, or if maybe you're the more seasoned team member introducing the newer team member, you know, and kind of helping them form that relationship. Seems to me like there should be some practice and preparation and, you know, some maybe script building, if you will. Obviously, we don't want to sound like robots, but, you know, the opportunity to really think through this. Will you talk a little bit about the preparation that could and should happen in advance to these discussions versus just, you know, winging it and sort of practicing on the potential client or prospect?
For sure. Winging it is never a good, I would never promote that. So yeah, here's the framework. Okay. Let's say you're having a 30-minute check-in call, a 30-minute client call, prospect call. Here's what that framework should look like. First and foremost, this is the one area I think a lot of people forget to do. I did it today when we jumped on and we were prepping for the podcast, is the what's new elements. And for a lot of people, they just kick off the call. Hey, how was your holiday? How was New Year? You know, was it good? Did you stay local? Or that's like the big, and it's all good. It's what everyone does. I'd like to start out my calls with what's new, and it's what's new in my life. I mentioned to you, Julie, that this was the first day, as we're recording, this is the first day in almost 4 weeks that I didn't have kids in my house because of illnesses and snow days and holidays. So I'm just loving life. And you can probably tell in my emotion today that I'm just happy. So immediately when we started kicking off the call, we dove right into conversation about whatever the topic may be. But we didn't have that awkward start of, hey, so how's everything going? And I ask you the same question you were just asked every meeting prior. I'm kicking it off with what's new. Here's me. Here's what I'm about. And then almost every time it gets reciprocated with what's new in their life. And so I think it's a major element. What's new in your life? Start with that. That leads to the personal. And now we're probably about 5 minutes in, no longer. You don't want to have these 25-minute calls where you just talk about pleasantries and you don't get to the business side. So about 5 minutes, you want to start transitioning into past business. Hey, how's everything been? How did 2024 shape up for you? Here, you're listening for anything that you could have helped with back in 2024, any pain points, you're taking notes. Then you want to transition to future business. How's 2025 looking for you? What's the outlook? Here, you're looking for ways to help them, whether it's you as for employment, you know, for them to hire you, or just as a friend. I've mentioned before, how can I help you? So I end calls. This is where you want to start focusing on how can I help you? So what's the future look like this year? You know, what are some challenges? What are some big opportunities? I'm taking notes as to introductions I can make for you, anything I can do to help you. And then I want to get to the ask, which we've talked about, making that ask. And then the most important part, oh my God, just please, now that you hear this, please do this every time. Before you get off the phone with a client or a prospect, secure the follow-up meeting before you get off the phone. The advantage in this virtual world is that we are all one click away from our calendars. We're literally always attached to our calendars. So before you let that person get off the call, say, hey, I have a few things here, a few action items, a few things we want to follow up on. Want to be cognizant of your time. What's the week of the 17th look like for you? Like, are you around? And then again, stop talking. Yeah, because I'm like free from 2 to 4. Is that sounding? Maybe put them for 2. And then you secure the meeting, you send it to them, they accept it. Now you end the call with whatever the action items may be. But securing that follow-up meeting while you're on the call, it's so much more difficult for someone to cancel a meeting than it is to just ignore the request for a follow-up. So that's another key element to that, making part of that ask.
Well, Sean, thanks for all the points today on our podcast. And one of the points you mentioned over and over again was asking the question, how can I help you? Well, there is a way you can help us. And that is every episode of the Human Centric Investing Podcast, we like to ask our guests what we call lightning round questions to help our audience get to know you a little bit better in terms of kind of the person that you are. And so if you're game, Julie and I are going to fire some really top level questions at you and just want your initial reactions so that our audience gets a better look into who you are as a person. Good to go?
Let's do it. Fire away.
Sean, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Early on, I wanted to be a football player. I wanted to be a linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles. And then, you know, in eighth grade, I was 5'9", 150. And at 37, I'm 5'9", 155. So I peak early and then I kind of stayed there. So after that, I'm pretty close to it. I would say stand-up comic. Early on was one I really considered, but I'm pretty close to it. I always wanted to be in some sort of performance role, and a lot of what I do is performance based, and so I'm pretty close to it.
What's the last TV show you watched?
During the New Year's, my wife and I went down to Ocean City, just the two of us. It's our little New Year's tradition. We just start the year off with the two of us. It's like a little business retreat where we go over our goals for the year and stuff. And it's fun. But we totally binge watched the entire season of 1923. It was 1883. And it was like 1923, I think it was.
Nice.
1923. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I love that whole like series.
So my last question, Sean, do you use a paper to-do list or a digital to-do list?
Oh, man. Paper.
Good.
With an asterisk, in case my wife listens. It's like paper, and then I take shots of it, and I send it to her because she's the one, she's the very organized one. I'm the, you know, creative. I love to be out talking to people, and she's the one that's like, don't forget, you told them you would send the proposal by Friday. You know, she's my backup.
Still feels good to cross things off the paper, though, doesn't it? I don't know. There's just something about that.
And then that little cheat code where you write something you've already done just to cross it off.
Yes.
You do that too?
Yes, I do. My husband catches me all the time. He's like, did you just add the thing we just did? And I'm like, you're darn right I did. I really want to cross it off. So And for me, my last question is, what's the first concert you went to?
Oh man, this is going to be so embarrassing. It was,
if it was Miley Cyrus, it's okay, Sean.
I don't remember the name of it. Oh no. It was,
you could just sing a song if you want.
D.O.B. or something. I forget. It was like a grunge. I don't even know what D.O.B. I think it was called. I forget. They had like one really good song.
Must've been a good concert.
It was an embarrassing band. I think it was like D.O.B. or I forget what the name of it was, but it was a long time ago. And then my favorite concert that I've been to, the Lumineers. The Lumineers are really fun.
Very cool.
I call them at the Mann Center.
Excellent. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us here on the Human Centric Investing Podcast to share your insights. And for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more, Sean has a book called That Was Awkward, 7 Secrets of an Awkward Networker. And also, he is a speaker, as he also mentioned. You can look him up on LinkedIn, Sean Hand, or email him at sean@sellbyhand.com. Again, thank you so much for sharing all of your networking insights with us today. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
I had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Hartford Funds Human Centric Investing Podcast. If you'd like to tune in for more episodes, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or YouTube.
And if you'd like to be a guest and share your best ideas for transforming client relationships, email us at guestbooking@hartfordfunds.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Talk to you soon.
Hartford Mutual Funds may or may not be invested in the companies referenced herein. However, no particular endorsement of any product or service is being made. The views and opinions expressed herein are those of the guest, who is not affiliated with Hartford Funds.